Hey, welcome back, everybody. This week, Paul and I held a webinar. We had some good conversation on this, all about how rethinking your thinking has changed your life and the way you view money. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, it was great. We opened it up and just, you know, had the audience participate today, and that was kind of the expectation, and you know, how people have implemented IBC in their life and what opportunities have come across their desk since implementing the concept. And you know, a couple of people just mentioned how it's just a nice, peaceful way to live and simple.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
That's right. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back for another month. Today, the last couple webinars at least, we've done some whiteboarding and shown some different strategies. Today, Paul and I were thinking, I know people have some stories of how just becoming your own banker, starting to think differently has changed your life in one way or another. And maybe a specific opportunity that's come up that you otherwise would never have thought of or even recognized before because you started changing your thinking. And like Nelson says repeatedly, you just got to rethink your thinking, right? So I know Paul and I have plenty of those stories from ourselves and from some other clients, but we wanted to hear back from any of you as well. So Paul, you got any opening remarks here?
No, but that was pretty good. I could just say personally, and obviously we talk about a lot on the podcast, that, you know, this concept and implementing it, you know, going 100% in on it has really changed my life. We were doing fine, right? Two military officers, dual income. Those of you who serve in the military know the deal. You always kind of get ridiculed, but like, oh, you're dual income, whatever. But this has really, really accelerated what we've been able to do. And those of you, if you're friends with me on Facebook, you've seen the last 2 years, this home building journey. And I've talked about it a lot again on the podcast and just trying to spread some knowledge around of how putting money, just changing one thing, right? Changing where you put your money and where you put it first has just really, again, just accelerated what I've been able to do and kind of realize a dream maybe 15 or 20 years ahead of where most people in my neighborhood are realizing it, you know, well into their 60s and in some cases their 70s. So, hopefully, today we'd like you guys, regardless if you're a current client or not, you know, you're here for a reason, but it would be nice to kind of find out how you've learned about IBC, how you've implemented it in your own life and what, you know, what changed or what clicked for you and what is, how has it affected your financial life and your life in general? So,
yeah, good. Well, I'm still admitting some people here, so they may have to catch up. I don't know if Rebecca or David, if one of you want to maybe summarize in the chat for anybody new who showed up, that'd be extremely helpful. Morning, Rick. But yeah, you know, I knew a lot of dual income military spouses, right? And what you and Tammy have done together, you know, is multiples ahead of what most dual income military spouses do, because of the way you think. Just changing the way you think and changing where you put your money first, right? That I think has made all the difference. Yeah, we're happy to open it up and hear from anybody else. And I know there's some of you who do have stories, so I'll pick on you personally if you don't speak up. But we're happy to start with, you know, a story or two of our own as well. But, and if anybody wants to throw anything in the chat, questions as we go, questions or some stories in the chat, you can do that as well. But I'll go ahead and kick us off, and then you guys just raise your hand or come off mute and let us know what you think. But I'd say the first time it really made a difference in my life was I started my journey in 2010, opened 3 policies. I couldn't get one because I was because of my avocation in the military, so I didn't qualify at the time. So started with 3 policies, and they were just savings accounts for 6 years. I didn't touch them. And not that you have to just let them capitalize for 6 years, but that's what I did because I didn't have a reason to. What that allowed me to do was transition out of the military confidently because I had access to a big sum of capital if I needed it during that transition period while I got my civilian legs under me. But then it was even a couple years after that before I actually took my first loan. I decided I wanted to try my hand in house flipping. So I took my first loan to fund the rehab there, and I lost money on the house. But I will say I lost less money on the house than I otherwise would have because of where I funded the rehab from. It was from a cash value loan. I took a loan, you know, used that to pay the contractor, used that to overpay the contractor. I learned every mistake you can make in the book I made. But that 2-month flip turned into a 9-month flip and it just sat, right? But that money that I had borrowed from the insurance company against my cash value, there's nobody asking for it. There's no stress, no phone calls, no letters, nothing. They didn't care. So I didn't have to make any payments back, which is good because I didn't have any money to pay back towards it. And then when the house sold, you know, all the cash that came in, like I said, we didn't make a profit. We got a lot of cash back though. I just repaid the loan at that time. So it added that aspect of that entire experience, added zero stress to my life because of where I got that capital. It's almost kind of like borrowing. It's kind of like borrowing from my mom, you know, where she's not going to ask for it back. She trusts me. I'm good for it. And she's not going to bother me about it. But, you know, of course, I'm not going to go to my mom to borrow money. But that's what it felt like because there was no stress, no pressure whatsoever. So that was my first awakening into, wow, this is pretty powerful what I got. Maybe it's even better than I thought it was. So that is, and I don't think I ever would have flipped a house had I not had access to that capital in the first place. It would have been much tougher, you know, working with hard money lenders, wanting, you know, like 4 points and 15% on that money. That would have drained me. So, yeah, there you go. Who else has got any one specific thing you can think of in how this has changed the way you approach life and money?
Hey, Dave, ours is a little bit similar with the house stuff, but we got started on the wrong end, right? And we had some equity in a property, kind of did it backwards, got some cash out, and then it drug out. And, you know, we've had this conversation, what we call COVID and COVID hangover pricing, and it, you know, caught us pretty much with our pants down. It was terrible. And then finally my sweet wife was so kind to me through that whole process, but she finally said, "Hey, listen, if we're not going to flip this property, we're going to stay in it. Can we at least finish it so we can live in it?" But in the middle of all that, I was involved in some IUL stuff and just the wrong products, the wrong thought process, right? Long-term thinking, but not being able to use the cash value and all that. Well, now on the other side of that, you know, that stinks because there's different rules in different states and what you can do in cash out, blah, blah, blah. And I had to learn that the hard way. But IBC and learning that process has become a savior. I've been in it just shy of 3 years. And, you know, it still hurts. It's a lesson learned. But now we have such a sense of peace because IBC has basically saved us through this situation. And I'm talking about 100 grand plus on the wrong side of things, right? And that would normally have made me have a nervous breakdown, I'll be honest with you. And now you just chip away a little at a time and you put the numbers on there, the real numbers, not the fake numbers that you get shown. And you're able to see, okay, we can work our way out of this process. And not only that, we can just exponentially blow this thing up in a few short years, this is going to be completely game changer for our entire family. So it's been really nice to, even though it's on the wrong side, it's been really nice to feel the pain a little bit.
Nice. Yeah, the peace of mind has been huge for me and my family. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I remember that, Wes, you had just started an IUL. And we looked at that 10-year, because there's that 10-year surrender penalty that is there for the first 10 years, which is how they keep you in them. And you were brave enough. You said, you know what? I'm just going to cut my losses. It's a learning experience. I learned a lesson, cut my losses, be done with it, and start putting my capital towards something that's going to grow permanently and be there for the long term, guaranteed. So well done, man. Joe had his hand up.
Yeah. Hey guys. Nice to meet you, Wes. Good to see you, sir. My path was really different, but the freedom and peace came when I jumped through some hoops for car financing. I used the Toyota military discount and, hey, $500 is $500. And then refinanced it literally about a week later with Navy Federal because they gave another couple $100. And I thought that's all good. And it became a pain point of trying to make principal only payments to that note. You know, the number was real low, number small, which is good, if you will. But it was just a PITA to make the extra principal payments. I'd have to pay and then I'd have to call and they'd reverse it and et cetera. And so I, at that time, the number was 50 with Lafayette and I needed 60. And so I sent an email to Ryan. And within 7 days, the amount that I needed was in our checking account. And my wife and I were on our way back from the airport from visiting friends and family. And we stopped at a local Navy Federal branch. And I said, I'd like to pay this off. And she looked at the numbers. She said, okay, it's 60,000, blah, blah, blah. And I stroked a check and walked away without that. And then it was freedom and it was peace, kind of like Wes said. And so that was a major light bulb moment. For me, and just the ease of being able to choose when, how, and if I paid that note back to my company.
Yeah, I love that. You know, navigating the banking system sometimes can be tricky. And I bank with Navy Federal as well. And sometimes they are not the greatest at things. Like I've got a couple of HELOCs with them and just trying to make they changed their portal recently in the last year or so and updated it, and it looks great, but it doesn't function nearly as good as their kind of old antiquated website from yesteryear. So, and I've called and complained several times, but yeah, it, you know, IBC and just, you know, repaying policy loans is quite easy. You know, you log into your portal, you can do it from your phone, your iPad, your computer, and then you make a payment, whatever payment you want to make, and as often as you would like to make that. And it is going to, as you said, principal only, right? You are paying down the principal of that note. And also now you own that truck. You get the title in the mail a few weeks later from Navy Federal or whoever's holding the note. So as far as credit bureaus are concerned, that debt is paid.
Yeah, you've got no debt. Your debt to income ratio just improved because you have that debt is gone. It's not on the books of the banks and the credit bureaus.
Yep, it's completely done in the private, which is nice.
Yep. Excellent. Thanks, Joe. That, you know what? Speaking of cards, I've gotten to just in the last couple of years play the bank for my kids. You know, I've got it when they hit, you know, two of them who have already surpassed 16 and went out and got a car at 16, because that's a lifestyle improvement for me when they get a car. But, you know, I matched them up to a certain limit on the money they raised and then loaned them enough to get something that's not going to break down. And now they pay me back every single month. So I get to be the bank for them. There's never any worries about having the cash for a car whenever we want it. But they also now get to learn what it's like to have a payment come due at the first of every month and budget and just develop that habit pattern of putting $250 or $300 towards a payment every single month as a 16-year-old. So it'll be good for them. And it's not a, it's not going to devastate them if they can't make a payment. Dad'll be mad and he'll add a little juice to the note, but they know they're not going to lose their car necessarily. Well, I know Mr. Waller here has got something on his mind.
Always does.
I got 100 stories I can go through right now. But want to. My favorite. I don't know if I have a favorite off the top of my head, but this is one of my favorites because this is IBC in action before even, this is not even using my policy, right? This story is when I was, we got our first policy and we were funding it, right? And we built in that first year lump sum. And that stretched us a little bit. Okay. But we wanted to max out. We just knew we needed to get as much money in here. If they were giving us, over, I forget what the exact amount was, but we wanted to get every dollar in there. At the same time, you guys talk about how opportunities pop up everywhere, right? So here I am working for one of my buddies in town, this retired guy, John, and I'm drywalling this garage, painting it, mudding it, the whole nine yards, bunch of yard work, siding the house, just full remake. And in the meantime, this 36-foot shed that my neighbor has comes up for sale. He's like, hey, it didn't appraise because it's not on a foundation. Do you want it for what it cost me a couple years ago to build it when lumber was really cheap? And so it was only like 10 grand. And I was like, well, that's over $20,000 in lumber alone. You'll never be able to build this size of shop again for 10 grand. Like, not going to happen. I didn't have the cash because I was busy putting as much as I could into that lump sum. So I went to my friend John, who's paying me to help him at the time. And I said, look, John, I'm going to be honest with you. This opportunity just popped up in my sphere and I could go and get a loan right now from a bank, actually. But I'm going to be honest with you, John. I just discovered that I don't like bankers anymore. And apparently one of these principles, I'm supposed to not do business with banks, right? And so I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. I was like, but let me ask you, would you like to make the interest instead? Because he did really well for himself in his career. And he said, well, what are you kind of thinking? And I never done this it before. So I just said, hey, we could draft up a contract. The interest could go to you instead. And we'll just, if you give me the 10 grand in cash, we go to the bank and sign up, direct deposits, notarized, all of it will be legit. And I showed him why I was doing it. I said, I could go to a bank, or at this point I could use a policy loan. And he looks at me, he's like, that's a great idea, Dave. And I was like, it is? He's like, yeah. Because it turns out he felt the same way. And he went and told me a story about this banking deal that came in when the banks were calling notes from everyone back in the day. Mm-hmm. And because of the way that he did it, he didn't get called on the note, right? But that's something that happened to a lot of his friends. And he's like, the fact that you understand and can see something like that at your age is beyond me, but I'm going to help you out. And so we went into a private contract with an employer of mine to acquire an asset that was undervalued, right? Before I even had a policy in place, and just worked out monthly payments so that I could fund the policy, because this asset was going to be, the life insurance policy asset, way more important than a $10,000 stick built building. Right. But I wanted both. How did I do that? Just using a principle of going and, transacting amongst my peers.
Another private transaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were thinking both and. Mm-hmm. You said, well, I both want to save up to fund this lump sum and I want that shed.
Yep.
How do I make this happen? And you did by doing private banking with somebody else. So why is that guy not a client yet?
Oh, well, he's older and very well set. And
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All the more reason.
Right. Yeah. I think he has a bunch, to be honest. And he's very chill. I only get a little bit of time to chat with him because he's very on point. But when I sold him, I don't want to work with bank. Do you want to make interest? I had to have something to tell him while I was in passing, like, hey, John, you want to make like 500, but I offered him 10% interest over the course of, I think, 2 years. And he was like, how about 2 years or no, 10% at a year and I'd pay him back. And he was like, whoa, that seems a little bit much. How about 2 years and 5%?
Twist my arm.
Yeah. I was like, okay, half. Yeah, half the interest and double the amount of time to pay it back. Yeah. That's amazing. He's like, yeah, but you've done really well here and I don't want to stretch it too thin. So we were literally just going back and forth negotiating about a contract. I mean, this is stuff we can all do right now. And I had no idea.
That's a great example of a partnership where the one who's got the funds is willing to take less to make sure that the partnership works out. So he was covering his bets better by making sure he made the payments low enough that he knew you wouldn't have an issue with it. And therefore you both win. That's, yep. Those are the kind of partners you want, man. That's awesome.
Yep. And I think he's the one, I brought up collateral and, that's another scenario of being in partnership is, I was like, look, John, if I miss a payment, what do you want? Because it's yours. You're doing me such a favor. This is your money and you're in retirement now. And I know you've done well, but that's one of those things I could see being like, I saved up a lot. Here's 10 grand cash. I mean, it was just like, that takes a lot. So I wanted to be above reproach and say, look, you're showing me good faith. I think I put one of my vehicles as collateral. Oh yeah. It was my Pathfinder at the time. I was like, I'm going to sell this anyway, but it is the collateral. And if I sell it while we're still in contract together, you have the option to get paid back first if you'd like your money in a lump sum, because then you'll know I'll have it. If not, we can carry on. And he's just like, I'm okay. And we're fine making payments. This is working out great.
Cool.
So
good. Yep. You know, Dave said both and oftentimes we were just talking about, Dave and I were talking about this the other day, about how people, you know, they get into our process and they have something else to do. They're saving, like I've got this one client, very good household income, north of 500K a year, retired military officer, you know, doing very well. But they think they can't fund a policy as it should be relative to their income appropriately and go do the thing that they want to go do. And I think you just kind of, in a roundabout way, showed that you can do both. You just have to, you have to dedicate a little bit of brain power to think, all right, because the way my mind works, Dave's mind works, and people who are practicing IBC at any level is, okay, how can I do this, but how can I flow money through my financial system, my private banking system, my system of policies before I send money to the IRS, before I buy this rental property, before I build this pool, or what, make this down payment for this thing, whatever, finance a car. That should always be the mindset, is if there's not always a way, but most of the time there is a way to do both simultaneously. So don't forget that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
How can I capture these dollars? That's what you guys keep saying that really, I think you should keep saying is how can I capture these dollars first? That's it. If most people, the average person, just started thinking that right there, it would change everything. Just where could I capture my money so it can work for me for better? That's it.
And that's the problem most Americans are facing, whether they, and of course they don't know it. If they knew it, they'd be doing this, right? Is that every time they want to go do something, they're taking money from a place where they're interrupting the growth of that money permanently. So whatever compound line or destination they were on has been permanently disrupted because they're liquidating a part of an investment. They're taking money from a savings account. They're taking money from a checking account. They're pulling money from a certificate of deposit. All of those things involve interruption of growth permanently. Where we come in with IBC and dividend paying whole life is we're not using our own money. We're going to borrow against the value of the policy itself, and borrow money from the life insurance company while our money just keeps growing uninterrupted. And it's really, that is the trick, is to have uninterrupted compounding over a lifetime, over a long duration. And that's why all of you practicing, you're, you know, compared to your peers, you're going to outpace your peers 100%. And you will leave a legacy, all while still enjoying the benefits, the living benefits of your policies, right? Your cash value, your other riders that transfer risk to the company, all of those things. And it's, as someone, you know, we always allude to, it's a very peaceful way to live. And I think we all could use more of that.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any more important capital than your active income. Like the money you make that you spent your, you traded your labor for that money, that you should never want to lose that. And too many of us, just that money comes in and it goes right back out and it's gone forever. So that's your face value, I guess, is another name I would call it, is that that money that you earned, that's your face value. And if you can conserve and protect your face value as much as possible, and then use that, allow that to continue growing, just leverage it and use it to put elsewhere that's going to, you know, pay you a passive income or dividends or something like that. You know, imagine what you could do if you got to keep the majority of the face value, the capital that you're earning on an annual basis. If you could capture a big chunk of that permanently and never let it slip through your hands forever. That makes
that's
a huge difference.
That's a question I've been asking new clients during the process is, you know, all right, take the money you're going to make between now and age 65 or 70. How much of that money do you want to keep in your family?
Which also happens to be your human life value, approximately.
Your human life value, right. And to their credit, a lot of people say, well, I'd like to keep as much of it as possible, which I think is the correct answer. All of it, as much as possible, whatever. And this is the only way. Realistically for most people, where they're going to, we're going to keep all of our future income in the family, regardless if we make it or not. Life might get interrupted tomorrow. Who knows? Yeah. But one thing is for sure, death will occur at some point in the unknown future.
Yep. So you'll keep as much as you possibly can while you're here. And then everything you probably ever earned over the last few decades of your life is going to be returned to the family tax-free.
Yep.
Anybody seen that movie, Ready Player One?
So you guys mentioned that yesterday. Rebecca mentioned that on a call yesterday, and I watched half of it last night.
Well, you know, when they like zero out in the game, like they lose all their coins, like they turn into coins, and other people are like, oh, it's going to be there.
Yeah, they lose everything.
Yep.
Nothing left.
Yeah, there's zero out. You guys have a bunch of policies. Just, and that guy's like, no, I got 10 years of stuff in this scare. Like, I can't zero out. And he's like running away. His arm gets cut off and money is just like.
that movie is. Yeah, good analogy there.
Yeah.
So let's see. I see. I'm going to pick on Daniel. I see Daniel here with his camera on. Daniel, what is what is thinking differently done for you and your family?
Hey, good morning. Excuse me. So, I guess I'm still relatively new to the game. Heard about IBC in 2023. Started a policy same year, but kind of a little backstory. I was very much came from the eliminate debt sort of crowd. Spent all my 20s just get out of debt all costs. So paid off, you know, tens of thousands of student loans. You know, anything that I had to finance, I was always like, oh, look how much is going away in interest, and just like wanting to just like squash it as soon as possible. So I kind of, yeah, that was mostly my philosophy, and like in my 20s, and like, you know, oh, I gotta, you know, index funds are the way to go in terms of getting in the market type of thing. Never really dabbled in like day trading or anything like that. But also started like a 401k as soon as I got out of student loan debt. And I was just like, you know, nothing was ever it. Like, I always knew there was like something that would get me more traction sooner. So right before I found out about infinite banking, I was throwing everything I could at our mortgage, because that was sort of like the only thing I could see, like, oh, all right, well, I'm saving a ton of interest and it's going to be accessible in the future. So then like around that time, is when I, you know, saw a random social media post about infinite banking. And it was kind of like an all encompassing sort of like, oh, here's sort of some like major areas like of, you know, potentially building your wealth, and like the infinite banking part was kind of like, like just briefly touched on, like, oh, well, there's this and like works for some people or whatever. And it just intrigued me, and like, kind of went through all the stages of like, you know, why isn't everyone doing this? Is this even legal? Yada, yada. Like, had all those thoughts that they talk about in like the case for IBC, basically, that book. But yeah, I haven't had to finance too many things in my life other than one car in my house. So, never really thought of, you know, this idea of, you know, being a banker, on the individual level, that is even possible. But kind of two major things that IBC has made me look at is like the multiple uses, of capital. Like, you know, I'd never really considered that you could, like David had mentioned earlier, that you could capture dollars somewhere to use somewhere else, and like actually leverage capital. So yeah, I was kind of just primed at that point to find infinite banking, and I'm still very much in the capitalization phase. You know, I've taken some loans and probably a little more than I'm comfortable, made some investments, the sort of second thing that infinite banking has taught me is just this idea of human life value, and that by far the greatest asset is myself and my ability to make money, you know, in the long term. So like, yeah, prior to finding infinite banking, of course, you know, if I was going to do life insurance, I was going to do term and invest the difference. But yeah, so that was of course just like a lost cost type of thing. And just, you know, there's much more important things to do in my mind before I even did the term. So yeah, that was the whole idea of human life value, and that being an asset, really got my, kind of rewired my thinking, and, so I guess a recent sort of example of why I can rest easy more so with IBC is, so I got a third kid on the way due in January, and, you know, not doing traditional health insurance, doing like a health sharing program, and kind of like got the bill like all up front for some things, it's like, wow, okay, like put it on a credit card, worry about it, you know, a month, worry about it a month from now type of thing. And just like the only alternative besides kind of taking a policy loan to, you know, pay 20%+ interest as opposed to, you know, less than 10 with a policy loan. Like the only, like I would have been scrambling to, you know, find out what the heck to do, in that amount of time to mitigate that interest cost. So I don't have anything too flashy other than kind of those things that pop up from time to time of like, wow, it's really a peace of mind to have this option and like so quick.
Yeah. And having access to capital. That's really it. I really like what you mentioned about human life value and viewing yourself as your greatest asset. You're the apex asset, because you would have nothing else if you weren't generating revenue, if you weren't producing. So I think people, when you're in that buy term and invest the difference, you view life insurance as nothing more than an expense, a necessary evil, just like car insurance and home insurance. But when you view it in the way that we all view it, it becomes that's your favorite asset to start capitalizing, because you're really capitalizing yourself and your future productivity. So you get to own your future productivity, which is pretty incredible. So if you stop working today, you know, if God forbid you get hit by a bus full of nuns tomorrow crossing the street, your family captures all of your future productivity. Like that's the way I think about it.
Without tax.
Without income tax. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think we had an episode, Dave, where the analogy was if you had a money-making machine in the basement or in a factory somewhere, you know, and it was printing you $1 million, you know, $1 million a year, you know, would you insure that thing against breaking down or against destruction? Of course you would.
Yeah, and it was going to last for another 25 years.
Yeah,
Probably want to insure it for at least $25 million because that's how much it's going to produce for you.
That's
over
right.
The next 25 years.
You know, it's sad that the American public, you know, most people, even people that, you know, that we find that are doing extremely well, you know, very high incomes, whether they're doctors or whatever they're doing, have really been just kind of tricked into thinking that they don't, like, this is a terrible place to put money. And it's we've seen it. We've brought up examples. It is, you know, several people that I have known in my life, whether it was in the Army or somewhere else, where not following this wrong strategy of, you know, buy term and invest the difference or whatever, the term, now I'm in my 50s, the terms are expiring and, oh crap, I had cancer 2 years ago. And now my investments did not earn 12% year over year compounding. Surprise, they never will. And now I don't have nearly the wealth that I thought I was going to have. And oh gosh, my spouse has never worked. And if something happens to me, she's going to have to move in with her adult children. I've heard these stories, I mean, over and over and over again. And it's all because people are following the wrong advice. Buy term and invest the difference is a slogan, not a strategy. And how could it possibly be a strategy if it works, if it's supposedly the catch-all for everybody? There's no way that can be true.
Yeah. Yeah, you just reminded me of something I said a few times before, but like, don't let your legacy be a GoFundMe page for your family.
Yeah, I've thrown thousands of those over the years.
I know.
People that I've never, that I haven't talked to since high school.
Yeah.
You know, anonymous. There you go. Like,
yeah. So I don't want anybody to ever create a GoFundMe page for me or for my family. So if you had that thought, just forget about it, because my family doesn't need it.
Roger that.
Nobody had that thought.
No. Okay, good. I forgot who I was talking to, Paul.
With hair like that, he possibly could need our help.
You know.
People underestimate just because it's so simple. I think that's where it throws people off.
Embrace it. Embrace simplicity.
It is so utilitarian. And I don't know if you guys watched a Diary of a CEO, but he was interviewing some the other day, and it was talking about money. And he said, there's this sweet spot where if you don't know enough and you just like play it safe, you'll win. And he's like, but there's this middle ground between that and really rich people, right? Where they understand that. And so they come back down and just say, oh, simplicity, consistency, and, you know, security, the guarantees, this thing trugging along over time, me saving money over time, and all these things compiled together, so it's going to have me win. The people in the middle that are like, oh, it needs to be more confusing and complex and ROI, and that, they end up losing money and never making it because they're just confident enough to take on risk. Mm-hmm. And that's where they go wrong. But anybody that makes it to $1 billion or whatever, they end up driving the Toyota pickup or, you know, all the utilitarian stuff. They're like, actually, that's what you need. You know, you don't need the Rolls Royce and everything like that. And then when you have bankers look over your portfolio and they're like, what, you know, like, I was going to try to get some money out of the walls of my house. And so I'm on the phone with this banker, and I'm going through money stuff, and he's like, oh, where's this? Where's that? And then when it gets to the life insurance policy under the asset category, he goes, wow, well, what can you do with that? And I said, oh, well, I could use it for this, but here's, you know, I'm just looking at other options because I might be saving this money over here for this. And he goes, okay, that's cool. By the time we got off the phone and I talked to him the next day, he said, you know what? Because I turned it down the offer. He said, here's the offer. It looks great, blah, blah, blah. The next day I called him back. I said, it doesn't make sense when I have this policy over here. And he goes, you know, I was thinking the exact same thing. You're probably better off just using that. And this is the banker telling me after I educated him on how my life insurance policy works, right? My whole system of policies in my family. And it blew his mind. He's like, well, if you ever need anything, you know,
yeah,
reach out. But he told me that.
That's hilarious. You know, this whole like thinking like a banker, when you get to know some bankers, you actually don't want to think like them. Because I sat down with the CEO of a local bank here once in a conference room, and he asked me what I did. So there was a whiteboard and a dry erase marker there. So I showed him what I did, and he was blown away. He's like, oh, wow, you can do that?
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty unreal that even bankers, a CEO of a bank, doesn't understand this strategy, this concept.
Especially a strategy and a concept that their business model holds a lot of themselves.
They do. Oh, 100%.
The big four probably have, between them, they might have 100 billion or damn near close.
Yeah, billions. Yeah, but you're right, David. This is a boring business. And this is a business. Having these policies is a business, and it's boring. The mechanics and just this business, you know, the product and funding it and taking loans and everything, it's very boring. The guaranteed growth, the dividends, but it's everything outside of that that becomes much more exciting, because now I have opportunities to put my boring business to work.
Yep. And I would, I would remind everyone to really listen to what Nelson says in this book, the proper classification of things. You know, he's talking about potatoes and tomatoes, and people used to think they were poisonous and whatever. And then Thomas Jefferson introduced the tomato supposedly to the American table. Anyway, but the proper classification of things, right? People always, you know, you could see it on these different Facebook groups. Oh, the internal rate of return on the 10 pay is better than the 30 pay, or in the, like, none of that matters, right? Comparing, you know, your life insurance, your system of policies against your S&P portfolio or something else, I mean, we are not properly classifying this thing. And that's very important. I think that's where a lot of people miss it. You guys are here, so you haven't missed that, but it's really important never to forget that, to really put this in the proper, in its proper place. And bankers, I'm friends with my local mortgage guy, the guy that gave me the construction loan on this house. He worked tirelessly. He's a good, really good dude. And I gave him a little like Nelson Nash starter pack, and he probably hasn't read the book or listened to a word I've said, but
He saw it in the underwriting. Like, I brought all this cash to the table because I had to, and I had to have a year of reserve, and I had to have this. And you've heard me talk about it, you know, ad nauseum here. But he was like, wow, I'm probably the only person that he's ever worked with that had all of that cash value or value capital in life insurance contracts. I guarantee it. The only one. But they didn't ask, like, oh, can you actually get to it? They were well beyond that. Like, yep, this is good. It's a liquid asset. Great. So they knew about it for sure.
Yeah. And banks, and I understand it's an asset.
They do. No question. But just, it's like, and it, you know, and I could say the same thing, God bless them, about home office people at the life insurance companies. They don't pay premium like you all pay premium. Most of them. They don't. Nope. It's the funniest thing. Like, they know, I guess they know what they have. I don't know. It's just, it's very bizarre. I'm like, see what your producers are buying. Like, you can look at my portfolio and see, well, Paul has a lot of life insurance contracts and he pays a lot of premium relative to whatever, you know, his income is. Mm-hmm. Why is he doing that? There must be a reason. But yeah, they just.
Good. And David said his contract in the chat, David said his contractor found $25,000 he didn't know about inside a policy that he owned. I've talked to people before on more than one occasion where they said, oh, I do whole life. I do that when they find out what I do. And I say, oh, well, let's take a look. Did you know you had $65,000 of cash value and you can borrow against that? They had no idea. No clue.
Not a clue whatsoever. Not a clue. What's even cooler is he's in the process of wanting to expand his business in a bunch of cool ways to make, you know, more passive income and all these other opportunities. He's looking for capital at this exact time. So to come over and say, hey, I have one of those things that you keep talking about. And then since you plugged me into Wealth Warehouse, I kind of understand. Well, he got excited and he comes over and he's like, hey, I have one. Yeah. Have one what? One of those things. Cool. And there's just a stack of paper. And like you guys mentioned, some people get these things. And for 7 years, he just chucked that paperwork somewhere and was like, whatever. It's just death benefit. I'm covered. And then he brings it over and he's like, what am I looking at? On the first page, it says he has access to over $25,000. I was like, did you know you had this in here? He goes, nope.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yep, they stick it in they buy it, they stick it in a drawer.
Mm-hmm.
Tammy and I didn't do that. We had ours a nice like binder, you know, and then we would keep it in the safe. So we had back when we had, you know, all these paper copies and we still have some of those, but yeah, we knew we had them. But never borrowed a dime against the policies I got through First Command
because never
took a loan.
Because in your mind, it was an expense.
Oh my gosh.
Expense.
I hated it.
Yeah, me too. I stopped funding one after 2 years, two of them. Two whole life policies I got when I was 25. 2 years into them, I stopped doing them. I said, this is dumb. I'm not doing $50 a month for each of these because I don't see the point. And then about, you know, 5 years later, I came back and I started putting as much as I could into whole life policies.
Yep. A little bit of education.
Yep.
A little bit of self-study. And
all that agent had to do to keep me from canceling those was slide a book across the table and say, before you do that, read this book. That would have saved them. So, and Christina says her husband did the same thing. What found money inside a policy he didn't know he had, huh?
No, actually he started those policies back when in his 20s and did the same thing. Was like, no, this is dumb. I'm not doing this. I can't afford it. And then quit doing it. And now here we are, you know, 30 years later.
Yep.
Now we're doing it. Just think had he kept doing it, right?
Yep. I've seen some of those that are 30 years old. My dad started putting away $50 a month for me when I was 15. Should I just get rid of this thing? I'm like, absolutely not. Are you kidding me? That's the best savings account you have right now. Even though it was 100% base and not, you know, set up for the accelerated cash value growth. 30 years later, that's an asset. That thing's great.
Yeah, I wonder back when I was young and I started buying whole life insurance through First Command, if my policies had been participating, would the would I have viewed them differently? If the I think I would have had my agent coach me like, hey, you can look at this, and I hate looking at the tabular detail, but look at the numbers and say, you know, you're going to have, look at all this capital you're going to have, that, you know, and it, maybe I would have received that information better. But again, as Dave said, I looked at it as an expense, $1,000 a month for many, many years for, I think, $800,000 of face amount, and just, yeah, just money out the, I looked at it as just necessary evil. I got to have it. And my agent was like, you need more. And I was like, no way. I'll never have more than that. No way. That's a lot of money in 2007, 2008. Like, that was still a decent amount of death benefit.
Yeah.
It ain't now, but.
Right. Which is why, if you think, you know, what you have right now is going to be sufficient in 30 years, luckily, if you have it properly structured, it's going to grow every year for the next 30 years, but
it'll grow with it. Yeah.
Your family's going to need more 30 years from now than what you think.
It is like, it is so shocking to go out into the world, and sometimes right on the internet, you know, if you go on TikTok or something and you start to verbalize that I'm constantly thinking of how to acquire more whole life insurance, the look that I get is like, you know, got something on my forehead going on. It is bizarre, but when you just think about it, long term, or any, even if it was, you guys mentioned the old policies probably didn't have any PUA or just all base, whatever. Even if it was that, it would help when you go to do anything else with getting capital, receiving loans, people looking at you. It's like, oh yeah, if you were just well covered, that banks only want to see those two things anyways, right? They want to see the guarantees and the collateral. Well, if you're set, you could start to just look good. That could give you a huge advantage in life.
Yeah. I think the difference is, you know, I have two all base policies with Mass, and it's not the all base that's the problem. That actually is just fine. It is the non-par versus non-participating versus participating, or non-dividend paying versus dividend paying. You have dividend paying whole life, whether it's all base or not, or it's got some PUA, you have a good product, right? You have a great product, actually. Nothing wrong with all base.
If you've got non-participating whole life right now, so I'll talk convertible term real quick, because some people have a convertible term policy with a company that's a non-participating company. And they say, well, hey, I've got the option to convert this into a whole life policy over here, so I should just do that, huh? No, as long as you're insurable, you should just start from scratch with a participating company. A company that's going to pay dividends and create something good for you.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'll just throw that in. And Daniel says, has everybody seen that saver versus debtor versus wealth creator graph? Maybe that's another something we could, you know, whiteboard in a future gathering like this. But, you know, savers and debtors, whether you save up to buy something or you go in debt to buy something, at the end of the day, you end up back at zero with all that cash gone. But the wealth creator, if you save it first and then leverage it to go buy something and let that money compound over time as you pay it back, you're going to end up with more than what you started with, always. Yeah, so Joe sounds like he hasn't seen it. So, Joe, I've got that free course on, is it in the show notes? I don't know if the free course is in the show notes, but certainly on my website. I don't know if it's on the Wealth Warehouse website.
It is on the
Wealth Warehouse podcast website, and find that free course. And there's a whole, I go through those slides of the saver, debtor, wealth creator.
Excellent. Thanks.
Yep.
Which, be careful. Some people will try to fight you if you debate them over it, because that happened to me. This guy was going back and I was like, hey, nice truck. How'd you finance it? He said, oh, I didn't. I paid it outright in cash. And I said, okay, so that's how you financed it, with the cash. So now that, and it was just, we were face to face, and he's screaming at me on how stupid I am for thinking that he financed it, when he's like, do you not understand I paid cash? And I was like, yes. So you're losing all of this. You didn't capture this. So here's the math on how much money you lost.
The opportunity cost.
You don't even know.
Right. He doesn't know.
He's about to punch me in the face over it.
That's the first principle that needs to be understood, is you finance everything you buy.
Mm-hmm.
You either pay cash or you finance it.
Mm-hmm.
Third party.
When I encounter people like that, I just channel my inner Jackie Chan from the movie and I just say, you're right. And I walk away.
You're right. I'm dumb. See you later. I mean, some people don't want to hear it. It's caught, not taught.
Yeah, nobody likes to be told that they're wrong or whatever. And that's not what this is about either. But it's very few people have the ability to understand what the hell you're talking about. You say banking function, controlling, creating a family banking system, dividend paying whole life insurance. That's why you guys on this call represent the 99.99%. You really do. I mean,
or actually 0.001%.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yes, I'm sorry. I said that completely back. Well,
yeah, you said it backwards.
To me, they're the 99.99%ers as far as their grade point average.
Okay.
But they represent 0.000 nothing of the population. Yes.
Right.
But thank you for catching that. So it's, again, we don't, this isn't a business that we're cold calling people or whatever. We're just here, you know, trying to spread Nelson's message, and people either understand it or they don't, and they read the book and they get it, or they maybe need some help seeing it, but you got to be able to see it. It's so simple, but it really has to click with you.
But like this conversation, some of those things you can't see until you're doing it. Kind of
There's a lot of that too.
You're actually not going to see until you're doing it, because you haven't changed the way you think.
Yeah. And it doesn't work. And this person that I'm thinking of isn't on this call today, but if you're only putting like some of your money over here, some of your savings, that's not the right way to do IBC.
Like 1% of your income. That's not going to cut it.
Yes. It's not going to cut it. Like it will enhance a little bit what you're doing, but you're missing out on a lot. All of your savings should go here. Mm. All of it. Okay. Yeah. I had to get that out there.
Well, all right. We're hitting the top of the hour here, folks. So we'll let y'all go unless anybody's got any closing comments for the group.
Oh, Christina had a question.
Yeah. We'll cover that offline. It's a little off topic for this podcast.
Yeah. But simple as sexy.
You know? Hey, coach, I'll get you offline. All right. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for sharing your Saturday morning with us. Have a great weekend. Have a great Thanksgiving next week. Hopefully everybody gets some time off. I'm blocking a couple days off next week, so don't try to get me on the line. But if you guys, anybody wants to talk to us to set up time, we've got our scheduling links in the show notes on every podcast and the Wealth Warehouse podcast website. So go ahead and schedule some time with us and, you know, let's review what you have. Maybe you haven't started infinite banking. Anybody on the call or anybody listening, but you've got some policies in place, and send them to us. We'll do a free policy review for you and show you if you got cash value. Maybe you'll discover something you didn't know, and listening to this podcast episode will magically create $25,000 in your bank account because you didn't know you had it. So check those old policies, get a hold of us, and we're happy to review them with you. So, all right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.